Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I am Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And we're back together again. It feels like we've missed a couple of weeks, like every month.
Yeah, it's been busy.
It's been staggered. Yeah. Busy guys.
Yeah, it's we're you know, things happen. We that's why we have such an extensive backlog. We have all these extra podcasts we can put out, so we can take a hiatus if we need to.
You guys don't even know some of the treats that we have in that library as well.
I know, there's every time I'm like, oh god, we can't do it this week. Do we have anything left? I look like, oh, we have like 17 left. It's fine.
We also have every week all the stuff that we say before the podcast I record. So at some point we have, and I save it as like episode number banter. So at a certain point we're going to have a banter episode where it's just all of the crazy, like the episode we just released. What was it? I've already forgotten. Mm. What did we release this week? Whatever it was.
Aftershock.
That we spent like 15 minutes before we recorded that episode doing Cockney British accents. And I think that has to end up somewhere on the internet. So I feel
I wondered where that was, because I remember that, but I don't remember hearing it on an episode.
Yeah, that's funny. Why was it that episode?
I don't know. But, you know, tonight you're going to get all sorts of Aussie accents.
Croiky.
Because
that's a right gator there.
Well, hang on. That's a little teaser before we get there. Hey, follow us on Twitter. At Horrible. I mean, chances are you probably already are if you're listening to this podcast.
You can do this in an Aussie accent?
If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, at Horrible. Ah, god damn it. I went to Cockney.
Drop that H.
God damn it. We're at Horrible Podcast. Horrible.
You can't. I can't do it. It's only offensive if I try, because everything I do sounds Caribbean.
Hang on, let me find my turn. It's
follow the Horrible Podcast, man.
Oh.
follow the Horrible Podcast. follow the, that's Kiwi. That's more like a New Zealand.
Like, you can follow the Horrible Podcast. We're at Twitter. We're at Horrible Podcast. H-O-R-R-O-R-R. So anyway, Twitter.
As if it weren't like anyone from Australia is like, I know that it's offensive and we're sorry. Like, it's just, it is one of the most like delectable accents to try out. Like, it's not like we're trying to be assholes. It's that it sounds so neat that we want to try.
We're trying to be assholes.
I'm sure people make fun of our accents all the time. We do have them.
What do you mean?
Whether we like to think we don't.
Hey guys, let's go to the mall.
Yeah. We definitely have accents.
Like, I would like to drive in that traffic. Gee, our healthcare is like 37th in the world.
Our infant mortality rate is higher than some African countries.
On Twitter, we're at Horrible Podcast, HorrorBullPcast. You can check us out at thehorriblepodcast.com. Change to the website coming soon. We're working on that. Hopefully get a little more content up there. Some writings, some scribblings, some ideas.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Also, I'll go ahead and do this because it's the elephant in the room for us. But Tyler and I had our first fight in 3 years.
What?
So I'm going to post that.
Why are you podcast? Why is this on the podcast?
It's funny because I thought, like, man, I told Drew and I was like,
you're about to start the second one.
I was like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good that we've gone 3 years without an actual argument.
I wouldn't even call what we had an argument.
It wasn't an argument. It was a misunderstanding, but yeah. we're going to post the screenshots online.
No, we're not.
I think it would be delectable.
You're very West Coast in how you approach this stuff, whereas I'm more Northeastern, where I don't want to put that out there. I'd rather just shove it down.
Brian, let's not talk about this.
Brian, I'd rather you don't.
And come on, man. Let's just share it.
Come on. My therapist says.
Hey, Bog. Get rid of the body.
So in tonight's episode is Wormwood, 2015? Did it come out?
It's 14. Yeah. Okay. It's 14. It's been in the works for a long time. As I looked at the little trivia on IMDb, it took them 4 years to make because they only could only work on the weekends.
You know who else that sounds like? Peter Jackson. It took Peter Jackson 4 years working on weekends to make Bad Taste.
Bad Taste. Yeah.
So that sounds very familiar.
I feel there's something else we watched that had a similar.
It's probably The Battery.
Idea about that. They had only worked weekends, but I don't remember what it was.
I will say also that Evil Dead took a really long time to film and then get out. I think Evil Dead 2 also took a long time to get filmed and out there. I think it took 6 months for them to film the first one, Or maybe it was the second one. Like, one of them, it took a really long time for them to film. And they were just kind of like a band. Like, they just kind of lived in a cabin in their own filth for 6 months to make that movie.
Could you imagine spending, like, just that amount of time on one thing?
No. I did with a novel. But, like, yeah. I couldn't imagine. Well. I wrote the first draft of Boogie House in 2008, and it's now 2015. It took 6 years for that to go from inception to release.
And how old's Jackson? So, I mean,
I have been working on him for 8 years. You're right. So. God, I have spent a lot of time with him. Jesus Christ. Time to leave that one. but it's just like spending 4 years like every weekend, just as you imagine, like the whole, you guys want to work on the movie this weekend?
I just can't imagine, like, after a certain period of working on anything, I'm like, this is all kind of bullshit. Like, I can imagine after 2 years, like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's pretty stupid. Let's start over. Like, well, I can see that.
Or the arguments that must have happened, like, after year two. Like, are we even going to fucking put it out?
But I think that also maybe kind of might explain some of the weaknesses of it, because parts of it kind of feel dated already. And it could be, if it's being filmed in, you know, 2010 is when they're filming parts of it. It's like, in between there and now, we've had all this other zombie content come out that maybe while something seemed fresh at that point, it,
like the Guy Ritchie shots.
Yeah.
There were some of those Guy Ritchie shots that, like, zoomed in slow-mo. That, I don't know how they did those, but yeah, I was like, those feel out of place for some reason.
There were a lot. They definitely took a lot from Peter Jackson and Dan Rive with the frantic kind of pace of the violence and stuff like that in some of the shots.
I would also say Sam Raimi. He's the first guy I thought of. I was like, this is 100% Sam Raimi.
I honestly thought like a more action-oriented kind of Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. So like Shaun of the Dead by George Miller.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, I thought Shaun of the Dead, too.
I like the idea, too. Like, at one point, there was the scene in the car where I was reminded of the battery when they're stuck in the car overnight.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought to myself, I was like, I wonder if these guys saw the battery like last year and like, God damn it. They beat us to it.
I thought of that too. I mean, it's a good movie, but it also is a movie that, and I don't want to say but, that makes it sound like it's not good, but it's a movie that is very influenced as well. I mean, I really liked a lot of this movie. There's a lot of this movie I really super, super liked. I don't know that there's anything maybe the end, but I watched it really late at night. So I was sort of like ready to be done with it, because it was late. So I don't know if that influences, but I mean, for the most part, I really dug this movie. I think the ending, which we will get to, is like an interesting take on all of this, but I kind of wish that had been more fleshed out. But I think other than that, I really dug this movie.
So, Wormwood : Road of the Dead is billed as, Mad Max meets Night of the Living Dead.
Right. Mad Max of the Dead.
Yeah. Mad Max of the Dead. Yeah. And it lives up to that in the whole post-apocalyptic thing. I really was hoping for more car sequences.
Yeah, it did. It made me think a lot of Doomsday at that point. The Neil Marshall,
I don't think,
movie.
I've seen that.
Even to the point of...
talking about wacky, crazy, you've got to watch it kind of
the
stuff.
Main female character as the kind of like the black eyeliner kind of just crazy, shithouse crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Doomsday is like, it's like Escape from Medieval Times. It's like, it literally is a John Carpenter. Yeah, I mean, it's like a John Carpenter Escape remake, but then through the guise of this weird sci-fi medieval movie, which feels like medieval times. I mean, it's nuts. And then there's all this Mad Max car road car shit. It's crazy, but I liked it.
Do you guys remember the Frightening Ass Film Festival in 2013?
Mm-hmm.
Dressed as the Your Next characters. Mm-hmm. We had that short played by the band Strung Like a Horse, GLAAD.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the zombies that they attacked, and they had the one girl dressed. This movie reminded me a lot of that one music video. Okay. I will post it on our...
post it on our site. So that'll be a traffic thing. Yeah, post it on our site like when we can.
So I'll post that up there, the video, because it's a really good video, but it reminds me a lot of this, and not a bad way. Like the video was done by shot by a guy named Tomas Donoso, and he did a great job on this video. But it has a lot of the same elements, the idea of the zombies attacking, and there's the group of people who are trying to fight up against them. It's good stuff.
It's very stylized. I mean, let's talk. So. What is, let's do plot. So sometimes I feel like we just like jump into like talking about the movie without maybe giving a setup. I mean, people who are hearing this have probably watched the movie, but maybe not. And so I think it, like, the plot is, I mean, it's a zombie movie. So you have the, like, you have some stereotypical, like, here are some story elements, but there's also some pretty insane, crazy stuff with the B plots and C plots in this movie that really make it stand out for me. So, like, let's make a collage of ideas that tell us, like, what the movie is about.
Oh, I was just about to say, if you're one of those people who hasn't watched it yet, you might want to pause this and watch it, because
it's awesome. Yeah,
if you're, like, spoiler, you know, allergic, those happen.
I kind of wonder sometimes if someone sees our podcast, like, this one's only 58 minutes. The movie is an hour and 38. Yeah. I'll listen to the podcast and get the idea.
Good point.
So the movie has three...
I don't hope someone listens to our podcast and tries to make points after listening to our podcast with our information that we give out.
A meteor shower? Is that correct? That's kind of what does
They allude... Yeah, they talk about the shower, the meteor shower they see.
So it's kind of like... That's kind
of
like...
Nine of the Living Dead.
Yeah, and does Maximum Overdrive
Maximum Overdrive, yes. Yeah, both of those.
The cars get crazy.
Maximum Overdrive of the Dead.
But even... it's interesting you mentioned that, because the whole idea that the cars stopped working.
Oh yeah.
In this one, because of the whatever happened. The international Australian expression of bewilderment or surprise. The idea of Wormwood, as soon as I heard that, when I first read the title of this, it was intriguing to me, because I do know the history of it from the Bible, being part of they reference as the star that appears in the sky once the third angel empties his cup in It's Revelations, isn't it?
It's Revelation. But
I don't think you know.
Yeah, it's the Revelation of John.
I don't think Tyler knows about religion. So it's referenced to that. Also, it's very heavily referenced in Stephen King books as well. In the...
Like trucks.
Like in Maximum Overdrive. But in... Like... There's a short story of his, and I can't remember which anthology it is. Home Delivery is the name of the short story. They specifically reference Star Wormwood as the...
Nightmares and Dreamscapes, I bet.
Yeah, okay, so it's Star Wormwood is what causes the zombies to rise and that. And I think it's even mentioned in Cell. I read that it was also mentioned in Under the Dome. I haven't read Under the Dome yet, but...
I don't remember that.
Remember it.
And it's also
there's so many words in that book. Like, I'm surprised every word in the English language is not in that book.
True.
It's also referenced in The Dark Tower as well. So
Wormwood is a word that gets around. Wormwood is a word that gets around.
Yeah, and it has a connotation. So if you know anything about if you've read the Bible, then you know that. Or Stephen King.
Which is kind of like the Bible.
It's our Bible. Then you kind of know that it's the heralding of trouble or the dead rising from the grave.
And the movie itself has three basic plot lines swirling sort of around this idea. One about, there's the husband and the wife. That's the guy. Who does he look like? He looks like someone, but I couldn't quite put my finger on who he kind of looks like.
Yeah, I never placed it either.
Then you have his sister, who is a suicide girl sort of person. Like, I don't understand. Like, I kind of didn't understand what a cosplay photographer. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
something like that.
And then you have, I don't know how to say, was the one guy Aboriginal? Okay, I just want to make sure that
the only term I know to use. If it's offensive,
I don't want to step in it. Well, because
he's one of a kind. He's an Aboriginal.
It's just one of the things where, like, I didn't read up to understand, but I realized... I just want to say he's just a dude, but like, I think it would be kind of culturally insensitive to not say something about, I mean, because Australia, you know, that's a huge part of Australian culture. So I just, you know, like, it's mentionable, if that a word, mentionable.
I almost think that that's almost not even its own subplot, though, because it's like a scene and then he's integrated into...
It doesn't mention him at all. Like, that's one of the things I like about it, is that it's not like, oh, here's this other guy who is very, like, he is in here just for the sake of having him. And he, you know, like, it's not intentionally inclusive. It's kind of like Night of the Living Dead, where it's like, no one mentions that Dwayne Jones, Is that yeah. Dwayne Jones is black? Like, no one mentions that. So, like, here, it also doesn't make, like, he's just a dude in the movie, which I like.
Yeah. Well, it also goes to show, like, it's kind of what we expect from Australian cinema, though. It's like, in our culture, we expect to see...
Everyone talk about it.
Yeah, the crazy Australian guy and the Aboriginal character as well, which over there, it could be the same dynamic as... Like what you just said, Night of the Living Dead, like the white characters and the black characters, but nobody's going to mention it.
I totally expected a kangaroo too, though.
But in an American movie, it would be, I mean, like we watched the remake of Friday the 13th several episodes ago, and you know, it was very upfront about race because you had one character who's like, why would you say that? It's racist. I'm black. Like, this movie doesn't have any of that. And like in America, it's very arch and on the surface, like it's, you know, there's no conversation about race. It's just like, here it is, black and white. We're going to talk about it. But like this movie doesn't really acknowledge anything, but it's just like, because no one would just have the conversation like, oh, so you're blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So,
don't your forefathers have something to say about this? I don't know why I just attributed a Southern accent to the redneck Australian.
I mean,
too.
Yeah.
Jay Gallagher.
Same idea.
What is his
don't
name?
Y'all think, don't Barry? Y'all think these Aboriginals are ruining this country?
So yeah. So anyway, yeah.
It made Tyler uncomfortable.
No, I was just looking at. I was just
Pull
looking at
context. That'll be a problem.
No. I was just looking at IMDb page. I'm trying to figure out the character's name. What are the characters' names?
He was Benny. Was
Barry
the
Brooke and Benny?
It was Benny.
Brooke is the sister. Bianca Brady.
Is that the actor's? I think the actor's name is Jay.
Is it Frank? No, Frank is the older
Barry.
Guy.
Yeah,
Barry.
Jay Gallagher. I said it. Barry, that's
Jay
Barry.
Jay Gallagher plays Barry, yes.
So anyway, yeah. And so they get embroiled. They get sort of like these separate plot threads. It gives you sort of the
shrimps are on the Barbie, if you know what I mean.
They never get tired of that. The
man.
My plot synopsis was the guys from the box art of Army of Two for the PlayStation go fight zombies in Australia.
That's what the mask looks like.
Every time I looked at it, I was like, this is the Army of Two box cover.
There isn't as much armored combat as the beginning salvo of the movie. Right. Like you get this like slow motion slaughter at the beginning. You think like the movie's going to be more of that, but it kind of slows down and becomes more mellow, not melodramatic, but more dramatic in parts. It's like tonally, one thing I like is it's very all over the place. And that's why I compared it to Sam Raimi, not necessarily the way that it was shot. It's more like Jackson-esque in the way that it was shot. But the way that it jumps from extreme, like, look at how cool all this blood is to like, oh my God, I'm really sad, reminds me of Ash crying over his girlfriend and then like burying her and getting down to business of having a chainsaw hand. Like, that's what this movie feels like.
Yeah, I know. I can totally see that. Because then you have that other character who comes in and is like your super stereotypical Australian character who only cares about beer.
Beer. Let's get some beer.
Let's get a beer.
Yeah, it's
no Foster's though, because that's not really, they don't really like that, I hear.
I don't know.
I almost bought Foster's tonight to celebrate this, but I was like, I don't like Foster's.
In an oil can?
Yeah. I was like, the small keg.
But that, like I said, they don't even, I've always heard that Australians don't really like it.
They don't like Foster's either?
Yeah.
Well, it's been
either.
It's one of those things. It's like when Crocodile Dundee came out, we were just all, an Outback Steakhouse, basically the most racist of all.
Crocodile Dundee, I was waiting for Paul Hogan to show up. I always wait for Paul Hogan.
If Paul Hogan would have shown up, that would have made this film 100%. It would have
been pretty awesome.
I mean, the film was... I already enjoy this film, but Paul Hogan showing up would have made me probably scream and shake like a little girl.
I've heard he's an asshole.
I've heard that too, but...
They brought the screenwriter of Crocodile Dundee 2 or 3 onto How Did This Get Made?
Because he actually wrote one.
Huh?
He wrote one.
Which one?
Here's the funny part. Here's the funny part. What happened with I can't remember which one it was. It might have been the second one, but in the second one, they brought in this guy, the screenwriter who was on How Did This Get Made, but Paul Hogan, like, he sat in and helped, like, he wanted to write, but what he did was they wrote the entire script, and then he went back through it and would cross stuff out and write, like, one or two words above it, and then he tried to have from what I remember, he either tried to get a co-writing credit or sole writing credit on this movie that he totally did not write.
That's almost like the when on the How Did This Get Made when Sylvester Stallone rewrote a script and wanted his name added to the actual book that the movie was made after.
He wanted David Morrell's Rambo to be. David Morrell's a famous action writer and action adventure writer, and Sylvester Stallone wanted his name put on the book. After the movie was released, he was like, I want to have the book attributed to me, and it was like a total book before. Like they optioned the book. It's weird. Like it wasn't a novelization.
The credits on two are to Paul Hogan and Brett Hogan, his son.
Maybe it was three. I think it was three.
I don't know why you'd want to claim credit for three.
There was in the Dana Carvey show. They had the when the Dana Carvey show was on for the season that it was on. There was an episode where they were doing best celebrity videos, and there was one where it was a hidden camera in the Paul Hogan's office as they offered him Croc 3 and how shithouse he went about Croc 3, bloody Croc 3.
This can't be true.
It is three. It is three. It's Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles. Absolutely.
Written
Simon
by,
Winsor, yeah.
Yeah, Matt written Barry. By Matthew Berry, the ESPN fantasy football guy.
Yes, I think so. Yes, that is him. Same.
Serious?
There are
yes.
two writers, and one of them was the fantasy football guy.
Yes, that's the guy. That is the dude. That's totally the dude.
We sure it's not Matt Berry from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
No, I'm pretty sure it's probably the other.
Nah.
So anyway, like one of the plot threads
was he on? Wait, was he on? Was it Matt Berry?
Yeah,
Matthew
it was Matt Berry who was on How Did This Get Made? Who talked about totally getting dicked out of
at one point?
Oh right, yeah.
He was
on the league at one point.
Yes,
so
he was.
Sense. That would probably be a connection that was established there.
Yeah, that's probably why he was on the show. That's I had forgotten about that.
I can't believe he wrote that. That's funny.
Well, he almost didn't get credit for writing it.
I don't know if I'd want credit for.
Yeah, well, so...
But write the first two. So, I mean, it's not like Paul Hogan couldn't write the script.
Sure.
I think got an Oscar nomination for the first one.
Did
the
he?
Script. I think got a Best Original Screenplay now.
I think
holy
so.
Hell. They'll give Oscars to anybody these days, won't they?
A nomination.
So anyway, like one of the things that I think reminded me most of Shaun of the Dead was that opening scene where Benny talks about his brother chasing him through the woods. And like that's an idea I haven't really seen in a horror movie that chases aren't necessarily just like frenetic and end in 1 to 2 moments. Like it will happen over time. And so like if a zombie chases you, you might not like it might not catch you. So you get tired and just kind of walk. And that's one of the things I found really hilarious was Benny just like walking in front of his brother carrying the rifle until he decided like, I guess I have to kill my brother.
Which is odd considering that how fast these zombies become.
Yeah.
Or they, how fast.
But
they,
that's at night.
That's right. That was at night, which is, yes.
When they're not farting out their mouths or whatever.
It's very Green Mile-esque.
So
he kills his brother and then...
Shit hits the fan?
I mean, the other plot, we have Jay Gallagher's part. What is his name? I've already forgotten.
Barry. Well, yeah, Barry trying to reach his sister who has been captured by the military and is being experimented on by this mad scientist.
I want to compartmentalize that and sort of come back to it because I want to talk about Jay Gallagher's part. He's Barry, yeah. So, like... He's just kind of hanging out. It's the Dawn of the Dead remake kind of plot thread, but a dude instead of a woman.
Gallagher is actually Clue Gallagher from Return of the Living Dead. No?
No.
God damn it. I tried to make their connection, didn't
you
I?
You did.
He's so, actually the son of Gallagher, the comedian.
he's Gallagher, too. Do you remember when that was a thing?
Yes,
Gallagher's
I do
brother,
that.
Yeah. So he's
Gallagher Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure he does have
Oasis.
Oh, right.
I get it. That makes sense.
I just read an interview with
he has a new album.
Yeah, that's High Flying Birds, right?
Yeah.
That okay. Rolling Stone interview with him. I kind of like how just unabashedly and unabashedly unapologetic he is about everything. Like when he talks about people, he's like, "Oh, that guy's a fucking twat."
They're both. Like, yeah. Apparently, yeah, they like, both were like that. Noel and Liam.
No, but he's still that way, and he's like, you know, I've mellowed out a little bit in my old age. I'm like, well,
have you?
Yeah. He's like, I like Bono because he drinks still. And I was like, imagine all his equals from the 90s who have now given up that.
Right.
Because like, you know,
they have to
out.
Because their livers are broken.
Right. He's still, all right, this isn't Noel Gallagher.
They're on dialysis. Yeah, so so Jay Gallagher's plot thread is sort of like the Dawn of the Dead remake where he's with his wife and daughter and they're a very normal, I think like they are set up as a very normal family. Yeah. I mean, it's
a sister.
It's ultimately, yeah, sister has like, but she's kick ass. Like she's weirder, but she's kick ass. And so like he and his wife and kid are like a normal family. They bicker a little bit, but nothing like, there's no trouble in paradise. It's just kind of like, this is the normal raising a teenager kind of stuff.
Yeah. The daughter calls her friends some sluts and everybody's like, whoa.
And
yeah.
won't get off the phone at dinner.
Right.
Yeah. Just your normal teenage stuff. And then he too has this moment. What's weird is like, this movie veers from one emotion to the next in moments, and I guess like that's a good thing that it doesn't sort of like just stick, like it doesn't stick with the sadness too long and linger on it. It just kind of goes like, oh my god, this is crazy shit, and then like, oh, I'm very sad, but then here's some more crazy shit. Like that's kind of how the movie progresses. I like that it doesn't go like, and now here's our like sad sequence. It's just kind of like, oh my god, this is sad, cut.
It's like, you also think that's how it would be in that situation too. There's just so much stuff going on. You don't have time to linger on your sad, depressed, you know, death of your family kind of.
Well, this
he had his one moment and he had no nail left, and then
right, yeah. Exactly. This movie kind of
is missed.
Yeah.
Oh man,
missed.
Spoiler. Whoops.
But the idea that I in this kind of situation. It's still that whole idea of in my head of like, if I was presented with this situation, I'd probably just kill myself.
Yeah.
And do he I tried to?
Yeah, and he does. I mean, come on. So one nail gun doesn't work. You don't try again. I've seen Dead Zone. I just put some scissors on a. I put some scissors on a bathtub drain and jam my face down into it.
I mean, I think it's historical. Like, it's something that a lot of people experience is that when they have a moment of weakness where they try to commit suicide, a lot of people panic and try to undo the damage. Like, people will slit their wrists and then try to like wrap it up, and that doesn't work. So I think that maybe he felt like he had the moment and then the relief of not dying and then moved forward. That's my only explanation. Yeah.
I tried to. I just
got Crasher's gun or whatever.
That's true. I did. I read an article a couple weeks ago about the Golden Gate Bridge and the suicides that happened on that, and the guy, people, everyone they interviewed who survived jumping, said that their immediate reaction as soon as they jumped was, "Oh my god, what have I done?"
Yeah,
yeah. It's like that. You know, that whole temporary insanity thing of where you're like, "Oh my god, I'm going to kill myself," and then you realize, oh, I didn't have to do that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Like, I just wanted to have a dalliance with the end, which, I mean, maybe that's what happened here. And I think, I think if you linger in the situation and you're, okay, so you're literally witnessing your wife die. I do think you probably would have that moment of like, fuck, I want to kill myself. But then you do, like, you're so, like, it's PTSD. It's like war. You're just like, no, I got to keep going. I got to find out what's going on.
Say fack.
Yeah.
Say fack.
Fack.
I want to kill myself.
All of a sudden, he's a boss.
I'm not going to engage because I know that it would be terrible. I'm going to, at one point, I'm just going to, like, break it out, and you guys are going to shake your heads. And
also, by the way, the zombies, when their eyes turn, kind of like Kate's eyes.
Hmm?
They kind of like your lady friend's eyes.
Really? That's weird.
Kate has very light eyes, and when she turns into when they turn into their zombies, it's like, oh, Kate's eyes.
I'll definitely have to tell her that.
Please do.
I will. She'll like that.
I like to think of that as an alternate version of Cat's eyes too. Kate's eyes.
Kate's eyes. I was trying to think. Oh, never mind. So then we have, okay, so let's talk. I think we need to like totally hit the sister's plot right now because it's so. Let's hit that plot.
I'd hit that like a tree on Endor.
If you were a stormtrooper,
that was a beggar's cap.
Oh, hey, Brian, you could check that off our list. Obligatory Star Wars reference, check.
Yeah. I don't know if we've ever made a Star Wars reference on here.
I try to avoid them because, like, what are you going to say at this point? Except I'd hit
that Kevin. What are we going to say that Kevin Smith hasn't said?
I know. Exactly. So the sister's plot is, it's the weird, like, it's,
She gets herself into a very Terry Gilliam-esque doctor situation.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not who I was picturing, but yeah, now that you mention it, Terry Gilliam's a good.
The whole like that fisheye kind of lens and stuff like that, it reminded me a lot of 12 Monkeys when Bruce Willis is going through the interrogation by the,
when he's like drooling all over himself at the beginning.
That reminded me a lot of that, and the whole like, even
Brazil.
I know Terry Gilliam didn't direct City of Lost Children, but it kind of reminded me of that too. The whole
also Junet then.
Yeah, but it gave me that feeling too. It was a very strange. The doctor was very strange.
He was
he liked strange. To dance.
Doctor
he liked Boogie
Strange.
He loved disco.
He did.
Doctor Strange loved disco.
Oh shit!
That
was a good one.
It's all right.
I mean,
Strange Love. Sorry.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
if you're listening to this on Friday, what you've missed is the look of disappointment on Tyler's face when he tries to talk and I sing over him. Guys, you got to tune in.
That's what they tune in for, is you singing over me. So why would we need to do
the
it more?
Look of defeat on his face when I start.
So as far as the sisters plot goes, like that B plot, I wanted to hate it because I thought like, oh, they just like every once in a while they just have this weird scene of science guy with needle and yellow suit, like HVAC suit or whatever. But I think it keeps it in your presently in your mind so that it just like it doesn't go away. So you're like, oh, whatever happened to her? But nothing really happens once she's captured. Like very or at least very little seems to happen. Do you guys disagree? You're like, what's your thought about like what happens? Because in the end, it pays off. But for most of the movie, it's like, okay, he's weird. I get it. But
well, even the idea, don't we only get the the twist that, or not really twist, but they give us the information that it's A negative blood that is not affected by this
right
comet
just
zombie
A or AB.
I thought it was A negative.
I can't remember now.
But they don't even reveal that to her in the lab. It's only revealed
to the guys.
You're right,
to Barry when Barry and Benny are found by the
right
soldiers.
Exactly.
By the captain
so,
and Tennille.
Ah.
Yes.
That's what I got. That's the only reference I have there.
Sorry.
So really
by the Captain Kangaroo.
I mean, they're we get the idea that okay, so the sister can now control zombies.
Which is really David Wellington idea, which I never liked.
That's exactly.
I never liked in the Monster Nation.
That's exactly
what, what was it called? The Monster Planet? What was the series
Monster
called?
Island,
Monster Island, Monster
what is the series called? Is this Monster Island, Monster
Monster,
Nation,
World?
Monster Planet?
Monster
World, maybe?
Maybe the Monster World children.
But either way, but yeah, it had that sort of idea. And I never liked that idea in his series. That was always the one thing that kind of bugged me, was this hive-like magic telepathic zombie thing. Like I just, that doesn't sit well with me in those, and in that idea. And so that part, I don't know, it wasn't awful. It sets up, it makes sense. It gives us what we need to happen and move things forward, but I didn't like that development really.
Yeah, that I found that was what kind of pulled me out of the Wellington stories too. Is like, I don't like the idea that this
Gary, I think was the name of that zombie,
the Viking zombie that could control everyone.
That was Gary,
probably.
I think
Gary's mod.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
I don't know. I kind of liked it as far as something that we don't see a lot in zombie stuff. I just felt like it was underdeveloped.
We weren't given the explanation. Did they infect her with something that allowed her to have this control, or was it always in her? Like it was always one of her abilities.
I don't know. That's a good question. Like I didn't think about that.
Inject her with that the blood from the zombie at that one point. So is that the reason why she could control that zombie?
Were they experimenting on that? Was they're saying they wanted her head? Right, they were going to send it back to their boss, their leader.
Now, like I did find rabid. That it took me until the soldiers picked her up. I'm sorry, until the soldiers picked Jay and his
Barry
up.
Barry and Benny, Jay's the actor.
Sorry, until they picked Barry and Benny up in that truck, did I start thinking, oh my God, his sister is in that truck. That was a big twist for me too. Like, oh, she's not in a lab. She's in the back of that truck. That was like one of those moments. It's like, oh, no wonder it's made to seem like it's so small and the camera's shot so strange.
Yeah.
It's because is it in the back of a truck the whole time.
We're still going Bjorn and Benny.
Bjorn and Benny.
It violates the rule of having two characters with very similar names in your thing. Like you don't want to do that because it's confusing for the audience a lot of times. Like two B names. It's not only is it two B names, it's two B names that end in Y, Barry and Benny, yeah, that is, have kind of a similar thing. But
for Benny, I think it was IE, but the sound, I get you.
I mean, I think it was underdeveloped with regard, like how the sister, I wanted more of it if we were going to have it. Like, if you're going to have it, we have more of it. Don't just go like, oh, this is at the end and we're going to use it, but then she's going to get shot and it gets, like, if you're going to have it, let's have this like wrathful, like Superman-esque or like Cthulhuian kind of ending where it's just like she destroys everything, which I guess eventually she kind of does.
But on a much smaller scale.
Yeah, like I wanted to be like, oh my God, this is so badass, because as a character, she's just tied up for most of the movie. Like, she's damsel in distress for most of the movie, which is really not something that, you know, I want out of a character like that. I think she should have been badass for much longer than she was.
Agreed. I mean, her character is set up to be more of that throughout. And so, I mean, I was expecting more from her, more of what she was going to be able to do, actually. Yeah.
She was the, she's basically the zombie version of Kerrigan from the Zerg in StarCraft.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man, that was a good reference.
Man, lots of references.
I've never played that game.
What?
It's Trisha Helfer, too.
That's who does the voice of Kerrigan?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. Queen of Blades?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyler. You got to get on that shit.
I know that there are, that you that you build things and that people can send spies in to take over your things, and that if they do that, it's very bad.
Yes.
Is
yes.
That, how, is that very, is it very bad?
Did you miss the real-time strategy boom of the mid-90s?
I never played Diablo. I never played StarCraft. No.
Yeah.
I was a first-person shooter guy.
Oh, my God. I loved and love StarCraft. That's a great jam. But no, the sister becomes that character. Like, in,
but way too late, I feel like. She's just...
Yeah.
Most, like, when she's on screen, I feel like they had, like, zany doctor guy so that her scenes wouldn't be so mind-numbingly boring. Because really all it is her being tied up and seeing zombie stuff. We don't really even learn that much exposition when she's on screen, do we? Like, do we learn a lot from her or no?
No.
No, we get that weird, the red camera, which I guess is kind of like the red tint where we realize that she's controlling something or she's seeing something through someone else's eyes. But... Mm-hmm. It's only at the last like 30 minutes do we start realizing that she can do all this stuff.
Yeah.
It just feels like
it's fine because they do inject her with the blood from the zombie that turns green, that greenish color. Mm-hmm.
Everything about this though screams, you know, Mad Max in the sense that I'm expecting the inevitable sequel to, or even Evil Dead 2, I guess would be another example too, just to be better funded and just more and just this but more, like everything just piled on and just expanded upon and done to that next level.
Like Ice-T, next level. That's his podcast, the next level. Anyway,
we looked up on it. There is a Wormwood 2 on IMDb, and what Drew is saying is true. And what I hope doesn't happen is that if they make a second one with more money, I hope they don't take out some of the the violence and the headshots and the shooting and the stuff like that is really good. Like it was more like head explosions I've seen in a zombie film in a long time.
I was going to say, have you seen Kingsman? Cause that's got more head explosions than I've seen in anything.
Kingsman,
new
film?
It's good. It's cool.
I want to be unequivocal here. I really liked this movie a lot. So
I enjoyed this movie thoroughly.
This is not a movie where I'm like where I'm giving it a pass. Like, oh, I liked it a lot. Like, I thoroughly thought this movie was so kinetic and weird, and I really liked some of the ideas. I just don't think they were fully developed or were like at the end. I thought it would have been more cool. I mean, I don't want to jump to the end because we're not. I mean, I guess we're like halfway done with the podcast, but. I kind of like the idea of like her controlling Benny and turning Benny into this like crazy zombie killing super soldier. But I'm glad I'm kind of glad they didn't do that, because then again, she would just be this like passive character at that point. Like I don't know. Like, I don't think that was as cool an idea. There's so many crazy things that happened in this movie. Like when they're Barry and the other guy, the bald guy, are running through the woods and his head just fucking, explodes. I was genuinely shocked by that.
And it wasn't it Benny's like, do you think he's okay?
Yeah. No, I don't think he's okay.
Benny's yeah. Timing was really amazing on this, and also his delivery. He has kind of like a Jason Jason Lee sort of delivery where the way that he says things is funny because the lines themselves might not be funny, but I think they just had to have written the script to say, like, you have to say what the fuck a lot because of the way Benny says it is pretty amazing. And that moment where it's like, oh, is he all right? And because we see his head go
disintegrate
everywhere.
It's like a water balloon filled with red Kool-Aid.
It was almost like Scanners-esque and how it exploded.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm, you know, in this, while watching this in the comfort of my home,
palatial manor
on a computer, it got me thinking too. It's like, so we're showing this film on Thursday night at the Chattanooga Film Festival, April 2nd through 5th.
April 2nd through 5th, like
Chattanooga
next
film fest, ChattanoogaFilmFest.com. Get your tickets there. And I'm wondering, I think this movie will play well with a large.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it brings up, so it came out on VOD last week or the week before. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly when the release date was.
Recently.
Right. So this is March 18th today. So probably March 15th, 13th.
Is this significant?
It's not significant.
Okay.
Anyway, but I think what I was getting at was that this idea that, yes, the format of films and how they're delivered to us is changing. But I think what this kind of illustrates is that we all... Tyler and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Drew liked it. There's some drawbacks to it. But I think in a mass audience setting, do you think you'd have enjoyed it more because you'd have been in that energy of what was going on?
I'm not gonna fall into the bad Milo fallacy.
The famous bad Milo.
Because it seemed with people. I do think this movie, yes, I think this is a movie that its energy and all of that is gonna carry better on a bigger screen with a large group of people who are thoroughly enjoying it. Yes, because I don't think it's bad.
No, right,
I do,
right.
I do think it will gain energy and potency from that as opposed to, you know, our previous example of this.
What was the movie from last year, Brian, that played so well? Why don't you play in hell? Is that what it was called? Something to that effect?
We had a few of them. I mean, like Cheap Thrills.
No, I'm saying, why don't you play in hell? Is that the name of the one that I'm thinking of? Like,
we played that last year, and it got a lot of like really great reactions.
Yeah, that because I remember walking in as people were watching that, and people were just like guffawing at the violence. So I feel like this is also similar. This movie has more though attempts at like gravity than that movie does. This movie has like there are moments that I like that feel kind of out of place where people talk about how this isn't that horrible compared to real life. Like real life, like before all of this is much worse because there's the one guy whose name I keep forgetting who ends up getting bitten and he has to be killed because he can't commit suicide. What's his name?
It's the beer.
Yes.
I can't remember. Frank?
But he has the moment where he talks about maybe his kid dying of a brain tumor.
Yeah. And then he says, no, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that like this movie reaches for something else that's not just like most horror movies portray the here and now as the ultimate picture of violence and the worst thing that could possibly happen. But I guess upon reflection, you can think like when you're in a moment, you can say, no, this other stuff is worse. And I think that's one of the things I like that this movie reaches for, even though like it feels weird in this crazy ass action oriented movie, but it's still there. There's still the element of that things happen that are worse. Fates worse than these happen. So I don't know.
I wish I could remember. There was one say he does say that, but then he contradicts that like immediately after he says, and I can't remember what he says. Maybe. It was really funny when I was watching, cause I turned around to Gina and I was like, this is worse than this. You just told us your kid died from brain cancer and how bad that was. And then he says something that kind of negated that, which I thought was interesting because I agreed with what you said. Yeah. It totally pulls you out of it, but in a good way, you're like, yeah, this is bad, but I mean, it's handleable or it's bad for everybody. It's like an equal opportunity bad. It's happening to everybody.
It's that moment in Day of Dawn of the Dead, the whole when they're going around the table asking what they were good at before all this happened, and the one character's like, I was good at being a dad. That moment where you're like drawn into the fact that these people had lives before this happened.
Yeah, and like it's
poker in Dead Rising. Like, why do you do that? So dumb.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it is true though that in this situation you can't. Humans are really selfish people, or are selfish people. Humans are really selfish creatures, so you can't make pain personal if everyone is experiencing it simultaneously. Right. You know, you sort of have to let it go. Like, everyone is going through this, but your kid dying of cancer pre all of this feels worse because it's more personal to you. And I'm sure that, like, the pain that the people in this movie felt post the zombie takeover kind of stuff was probably less bad than, say, like, when Barry had to kill his family, because that was sort of like at the outset. Like, I'm sure that was the worst, and everything after that was just like, you reach a certain level where your body just shuts down, but also like you realize what's going on. It's not just like, I don't understand this.
Yeah. Everything else like that was Roy Gator. I was making up Australian slang. That's one that I'm really going to try and catch on.
You know, I really wish that the,
it could mean anything.
You know what I'm going to do at home tonight and do? Go on eBay and try to find a copy of Bayou Billy for the NES.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
To play.
Because you're going to enjoy that for like 5 minutes before you realize how terrible it is.
Oh, God, these games were horrible.
Someone emailed to the Giant Bombcast a couple weeks ago and was like, here's the test if a game holds up over time. Play it for 10 minutes and then ask yourself, would I like to keep doing this for longer? And the answer is usually no.
Outside of the Super Mario games and like Zelda, that's why those are still great games.
Well, yeah, I'd say
I still would like to play them, but God, so many of the rest are so terrible.
Like Mario, Zelda, I'd go say Mega Man. Like,
oh yeah.
And Mega Man
and Metroid. I mean, that's
and Metroid,
the thing.
Yeah.
The games that last because I would like to play them again.
Sure.
The first Metal Gear that I'm like, I don't want to do this. No.
It gets obnoxious, yeah.
It was long. It was long before there were actually 100-minute cutscenes.
Yeah,
but you still had weirdly named villains that didn't actually distinguish. They didn't look distinguishable, but still had distinguishable characteristics. Oh gosh, Hideo Kojima.
Oh, Kojima.
That bastard genius. That's nothing to do with what we're talking about.
I guess so. The next
shirt we make should just say Kojima on the back.
Kojima. I kind of like that, just red on, I would say red lettering on white, just block letters, Kojima. Okay. Anyway,
you got to put it in the font of the snake yelling.
Oh, right,
with the exclamation point at the end of it.
Totally. Copyright, 2015.
Or just,
podcast.
Don't steal. Like, please don't steal that.
Yeah.
So, as far as like, the end of the movie, I can't quite actually remember what happens at the end. Once they freed the sister, and what exactly happens? I am completely blanking. They realize she can like control zombies, so she does that. Is Benny dead at this point, or does that come later?
Bitten or shot, and
he gets shot.
And then he says, and then he sacrifices himself so she can bring him back, and he kills the other two guys, and then the captain challenges Barry to a fist fight.
Oh, yeah.
This is very Archer, I guess, especially with the name Barry. It's like, challenges the fist fight, and then...
But the sister gets shot before all of this,
he shoots the sister, and then challenges to the fist fight.
See, that's another thing. Like, they set her up as, okay, so here is the badass stuff. I expected her to save Barry, but instead it still becomes about Barry. And even though he's the lead,
traditional gender roles that should not have been in this.
Do I?
There are very traditional gender roles that should not have been in this. Yes, she should have ended up, like, he should have thought the entire time he was going to save her, and then ultimately she is the one who ends up saving him. I agree.
But I don't know that he's even the lead. Like, he is the lead, but this movie doesn't... I mean, what does he do that is the most heroic? Like, what makes him the leader here? What makes him the person we care about the most? Is that meant to be there?
He puts the fire out.
He puts the fire out! It sounds like an 80s song.
We didn't light the fire.
Except on the captain's face.
Yeah.
Exactly. The idea that... I lost where I was going to say.
God.
Dude, you had it.
I had it. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to make such a great point.
So here's my point. I forgot it.
So, I mean, I don't know. As far as the end goes, I agree. I think it would have been more interesting if...
It would have been more badass too.
It was almost that the end was almost that moment in Attack of the Clones when Dooku and Yoda meet each other. It's like, well, it's obvious that we're not going to be able to settle this on our idea of moving stuff with the Force. We better settle this shit with lightsabers
and flipping.
Right. It was like that moment. You're like, they didn't have to fight at all. Like, this guy could have totally just killed him and been done with it. Or the idea, like the Incredibles idea, like, so yeah, he's got me tied up and he just keeps monologuing like, oh my God, just shut up and kill me already.
It's weird that we say we don't make any Star Wars references and then we've made two very major ones this episode.
One of which has been Attack of the Clones.
I know. That's weird thing. Yeah.
When I showed,
I thought something had just risen out from behind Tyler right there, right below his shoulder. It's like the way you dropped your shoulder. So it's like, whoa, what is that?
The Babadook.
It's a Pokemon.
And showing Jackson the Star Wars films. We watched 4, 5, and 6, and that was fine. We started watching episode 1, and I don't remember ever being so angry
than
I was this time around, like watching that film going, oh my God, I don't care about any of this.
None. Not
I any don't one. Give a shit about what's going on in the Senate.
Did he like that better?
No, he fell asleep within 30 minutes.
That's good to hear. Because I have a lot of kids I talk to who sit there and talk about, they watch 1, 2, 3, and then talk about how bad 4, 5, and 6 are because all they can focus on are the effects. And the effects aren't as good. And that's where they get lost.
But they'll grow up. I mean, I didn't feel the same way about Star Wars, but I felt that way about a lot of movies when I was younger where I was like, oh man, the effects in this are awesome. And then I get older, I'm like, oh, but the movie, this is not good.
When we were doing the...
Like Transformers?
We were making.
I know. I'm just.
When we were making the.
Giving you a hard time.
When we were making the rules and restrictions for like submitting a film, we were looking at a bunch of different other film festivals and what they required. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them said, "If we see digital fire in your short, God. We are not going to accept it."
Stay away from digital fire.
I just loved it. I was like, "Oh my God!"
Digital blood is bad too. Digital fire and digital blood.
Oh. I think that one of the first things we saw was like with the headshots. We saw digital blood. I was like, "Man, just don't even have it at that point."
Real
like,
blood.
Oh, they actually killed. I mean, it wasn't penal colony at one point.
I firmly believe that, in my mind, that Australia is still the Wild West.
No, man, they allow less video games than we do.
But I think video game I think that industry. Once you leave like Sydney or Perth or stuff like that, you
Canberra.
Get into Melbourne. You get into the middle of the country, and it's all bets are off. Nobody's really watching what's going on in the middle of that country.
I think that's why horror movies generally work pretty well there. Like. I've liked
exactly yeah
Wolf Creek.
I've enjoyed a lot of the horror movies that have come out of Australia over the last several years, I guess, the last decade. So I think it works. And this movie, I really think Wormwood works as a flick. I mean, it's really enjoyable. It definitely is kind of not. You can tell after you said that it took 4 years to make this movie. I can tell like there are weird lapses in pacing where I'm like, oh. Even though they had a script, like this still feels like the tone changes so much. But I kind of like that because it kept me guessing as to what I'm supposed to be feeling. Because, I mean, you have Barry who screams about his wife, and then there are headshots and comedy and laughs and then action and more somber stuff. It never quite goes one note. And I like that a lot about this movie.
Exactly. Yeah, it kept my attention. It was it did a good job in not getting boring.
Yeah, I mean, it kept going.
Wasn't a boring film at all.
And I mean, I think a lot of filmmakers, especially in the horror genre, tend to think that the movie will work so long as you have jump scares or this other thing. Like they have a thing that they do in their movie. And as long as they have that and have enough of it, all the other shit doesn't matter. Like who cares who the characters are? Who cares what the plot is? And I think that's why a lot of horror movies don't work. It's why it's so easy to pick apart horror movies is that they want the one thing, which is like gore or scares or whatever that, I guess, horror MacGuffin is. Like they want that one thing, but the other stuff goes away. And this movie doesn't really have that. Even though the characters aren't that, like they're not that in depth. I mean, these are not very deep characters, but yet they do pretty awesome stuff continuously through the movie. And I don't know what separates this from other unsuccessful movies of its ilk.
I just think that they did a great the effects. I mean, Drew mentioned the digital blood, but
I actually didn't. I just said I don't like digital blood.
I said I mentioned the digital blood.
Drew mentioned the digital blood, but the idea, like, it was unabashedly violent too. Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, people got their heads blown off, and that was just the way things were gonna.
And that's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is. Some things will never change.
Doodaloo, doodaloo.
In horror, but
that's the range of horror.
Well, you
that's the range of horror.
Bruce Horn's being the range of horror. You want to hear a funny story?
No, yes. To keep going with your point.
You want to hear a funny story about Bruce Hornsby?
After this, tease it and then come back. I want to hear what your point. Your point seems
like. He lost his point.
No, I didn't lose it. Okay. I didn't lose it. Is that I think we're living in a great age of horror and that we can get the films that are like this, where they're unabashedly violent, where we get just like heads blown off and shit just hitting the fan. And then we get the films like The Babadook and like Starry Eyes and. Resolution where they're not, there's something other than the typical horror that you're used to. Where they're not following those three films in particular are not following this typical role, typical script of what a horror movie should be. This one is a great zombie blow your head off kind of film. It's what a zombie film should be in this day and age. No, you know, they didn't shy from. People just going out and fucking taking a shotgun and blowing heads off.
It also, like, I feel like zombie movies especially are susceptible to sort of like plot.
You have to do something good to make a good, you have to do something different to make a good zombie movie these days.
Well, I just think, I mean, I think a lot of zombie movies are bad because they fall into the sort of like plot hole where they get stuck and like characters have to do stuff to go somewhere and it becomes about how to move the plot forward or like what the actual obstacles are as opposed to like what the characters want. Like if characters have like a pretty specific goal, then I think the movie works a lot better. And I think this movie has that because it has a pretty simple goal. It doesn't just put weird obstacles in front of them and then kill off the characters so that it's like, oh my God, here is an obligatory death scene because we haven't had one in 10 minutes. So I feel like this movie avoids some of the traps that a lot of these kinds of movies fall into, like where you have a pack of people and they slowly get killed off, like the end, then there were none problem. So I feel like this movie avoids a lot of that. And I don't know what separates it from other movies that don't work, but it, like, this movie works.
I don't know. I didn't dislike the movie, but I'm of the exact opposite opinion. I thought that everything in it, I thought it didn't do anything different that I hadn't seen before. I felt like I was watching several movies that I'd seen several times before, done in an entertaining way with some entertaining people, but I never felt it had anything original to say.
Well, majority rules, you're outvoted, Drew.
True. And that's where I think it's gonna be one of those weird movies though, or has the potential to be one of those weird movies where its sequel is something superior to what it is, if they're given more to work with and rather than just doing more with it, they actually do something else with it. But that was the thing. But I didn't think it was, again, I did not think it was bad. I didn't feel any of the originality side of it.
I don't think it's doing anything original, but I just think that it doesn't fall in, like, it is a sort of compilation or sort of like a cover song, but a really good one. I don't think it's original, but I think it doesn't fall into a lot of the boring traps that other movies do, like where it's, oh, we have to do this now. We have to do this. It feels free in a way that a lot of horror movies don't, where they feel like I could see you argue that this is formulaic. I could see you argue that this is sort of not original, just a fun movie, but I also think it is not unoriginal either. Like it doesn't do anything new, but it also runs very smoothly. It is easy to watch. It's not like, oh my God, here's another thing. Because that's one thing that I've become sort of intolerant of. In the, like, when we watch movies, we've done enough of these episodes and I've had enough to say about movies that get in their own way. Like, this movie doesn't really get in its own way a lot.
No.
You know, I enjoy that it moves along and it doesn't just bore me and it doesn't have these sort of like plot obstacles where it's just obligatory and just there to be there, because that's where a lot of these movies trip up. I'm trying to think of one that we've watched where I felt it was really tedious, the way that they have to stop the plot or they have to slow the movie down so that we can have a movie length movie.
Friday the 13th, the remake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, can I tell you this Bruce Hornsby story now?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right, sure. Right.
So in Bruce Hornsby's first album, I believe it's called The Way It Is. Okay. I could be wrong. He's from my hometown of, I think he's from Williamsburg, Virginia, but anyway.
Oh, we're getting bogged down in details.
Let's go. Bay Days. Hampton Bay Days. I'm going to say the year is probably 1987 or 86. Okay. He comes to play, and there's a contest for someone who owns a fishing boat. He'll come out and fish with you for the day. So my parents...
Is that really fun?
I don't know. My parents have a friend who owns a oyster... They're oyster people.
Okay.
And they win it. So I got to spend a good afternoon with Bruce Hornsby on a boat.
Was that fun?
Like, he was. Really- I mean, he's a fine guy. He just talked about his grandfather was an oysterman, right. So he kind of talked about it and stuff like that. But you know, it was more just like shooting the shit with him. But right. it was fine. It was yeah. just like it was.
But
just,
you know, it just seems like a weird prize. It's like
I was like I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old and like sitting under the little
get to eat at Chili's with Kid Rock.
Like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. There was like this like the thing on the back of the boat where they would like put the oysters in, wash them off before they put them into right. the cooler. But I was sitting underneath that, and I remember just sitting there looking at Bruce Hornsby, like going,
not knowing who he was.
Not. I mean, I knew I liked the song.
Right.
I knew he sang about the area of the world I lived right. in. I knew his album, The Way It Is, had a picture of a diesel rolling a silhouette, go to, eastbound, lovers glad.
Go to TGI sun. Fridays with James Taylor.
That's exactly what it was. Oh my God!
All you can eat apps with JT.
I would do that.
I would fucking totally go to All You Can Eat Ass with James Taylor. Are you kidding? I'd be like, so this hog-nosed snake you talked about in Copperline, what's that about?
That's a quick one. You pulled that out pretty quick.
Or I actually talk about like going to Carolina in my mind. I'm like, man, sometimes late at night, I think I can hear the highway calling. Yeah. Geese in flight and dogs that bite.
Hey, I'm just trying to eat my wings, my boneless wings. Please leave me alone.
He's like, look, I got to do this for like an hour.
I just want to eat potato skins.
Him just sighing and looking at his watch the entire time.
Oh my God.
I would recommend Wormwood though. I think I people need too. To see yeah. that. I would say watch it. It's like
if you're looking for something to listen to after Wormwood, James Taylor's Greatest Hits and Bruce Hornsby's The Way It Is. Sorry.
I agree. All of those points.
Listen to The Mandolin Rain.
I'm just trying to entertainly think of other chain restaurants.
I know. I could see your brain, the gear moving in your head.
Cheddar's.
With who?
I'd go Cheddar's with, let's see, who's another good
one? 50 Cent. I think it's going to be, you're going to get out of the range.
No, you need to keep into that adult contemporary yeah, range.
Like, I would like go to Red Lobster with Joe Walsh.
Christopher Cross.
There you go. Red yeah. Lobster with Christopher Cross.
Oh, that's it. Red Lobster.
That's a good one, Tyler. Red Lobster with Christopher Cross. I mean, because at some point you just get tired of Red Lobster's bullshit, and you're like, God damn, this is like the worst seafood ever.
It's admission, not secret it's or anything, but I could not name a Christopher Cross song.
Sailing.
Uh-oh.
I don't know what...
Run
what,
at the Wind? Arthur's theme?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, Run Shrug. At the Wind's a good one.
What is Sailing?
It's same. Sailing... takes me away to where I'm going.
Nope. I got nothing. That has no
miracles.
That's nothing.
You've never heard nothing.
Now if you start quoting Criss Cross songs, you know, I could do that.
The moon in New York City.
Nope.
You've never seen Arthur?
I know it's crazy, but it's
I've
true.
Seen it, oh, but I don't not since 1985.
You've never even seen the Seinfeld episode where they booked Christopher Cross for the Millennium concert.
Didn't he win some crazy amount of Grammys like that first one?
Oh, I'm Best absolutely New Artist sure. And I'm absolutely. I think we need to really.
If you started talking about Daddy Mac and Mac Daddy, I would be down though.
Listen.
Miggity, 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 Mac, y'all.
Real talk, guys. We need to talk about having a podcast about early 80s to late 80s. Adult contemporary rock.
Oh, yeah. I could do that.
You guys certainly can.
You know, Drew and I could probably hang as far as knowledge. I think I'd like to have Tyler in there just to be like, I have no fucking clue.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, no, I don't. I take pride in how little I know about adult contemporary music from the 80s.
You don't want to go to Applebee's with the Little River Band.
Bob Evans with Kenny Loggins.
A Bob Evans. Jesus Christ. Where is even a Bob Evans?
Ohio.
Right. Yes. I know there's a Bob Evans in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
In Ohio.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But no Messina.
Fuck you, Loggins. Also, watch the Yacht Rock.
Oh, yes. All right. We've gotten completely off.
We have
off.
Gone. Yeah. I would definitely suggest seeing Wormwood. I want to call it Wormwood.
I like that you
keep
that
saying Wormwood.
I feel like this is some bad Middle Ages night movie with Nicolas Cage.
See, we in the wood.
The wood is risen in the east, and we must. Oh, really?
So see Wyrmwood, and if you're in the southeast, and at least with like in 2 hours drive of Chattanooga, come see it with us on Friday, April 2nd at the Chattanooga Film Festival.
No, that's the third.
Thursday, April 2nd at the Chattanooga Film Festival.
And we're not saying that Bruce Hornsby won't be there.
Right.
But we're not saying he will be. Cause
I'm also saying that
Bruce Hornsby.
At that point,
I can't predict that.
I can tell you that, yes, Elijah Wood will be there. So I will tell you that.
Not Bruce Hornsby.
But not Bruce Hornsby. So, you know, if you happen to be at the Chattanooga Film Festival and you see me, let's make a point to say tell Elijah Wood that we're disappointed that Bruce Hornsby isn't there. What the fuck are you talking about? Exactly.
Well, that's just the way it is. If that's his response, that would be fantastic.
If he said that's just the way it is, guys, guess who's blowing Elijah Wood that night?
Me.
The answer is me. On that note, yeah, as I sit underneath a weird hotel shelf looking at him like I did Bruce Hornsby in 1986. All right, guys. I'm sorry we veered so far off course. I'm not, because we don't, you know, it's fun when we all get together. Friends are fun.
Yep.
It's the silence. God damn, it's like being married. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And make sure you go see Wyrmwood. Come see the Chattanooga Film Festival. And thanks for listening.